Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt Boom Boom Cabana.
Hey, I'm Double J, Jeff here.
This is Rich Swann.
Matt Riddle, the King of Rose.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it, bro.
Support Ollie. Support Luke. Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Home of Luke Owen. Whatever WrestleTalk is and whoever Luke Owen is. Quote the Raven. Nevermore.
WrestleTalk Rumble. Now and live.
Hello and welcome to the WrestleTalk podcast. I'm Ollie Davis and I'm joined by Randy Andy Datsun. Hey Datsun.
Hi Ollie, how are you? I watch AEW now, live.
Yes, it's so good. You might watch that live.
Absolutely. No, I had a great time watching the show, filling in for Luke, who's a busy boy.
Yeah, he's a busy boy today. It's a bank holiday here tomorrow in the UK. And we're trying to observe those holidays still somehow, even though work days feel the same as every day's. In Luke's absence, we've completely ballsed up the podcast recording. He usually takes care of this. So let's just get on with the main show. But let's talk about Brody Lee taking on Jon Moxley as Brody Lee's sort of first big feud, and I guess also Jon Moxley's first big feud after winning the belt. So this came after a pretty standard match between Jon Moxley and Kaz, and Mox won that pretty easily. And then the Dark Order attacked, like swarmed the ring. And usually they've been feuding with SCU over the last few months, really. But they also started to beat up Jon Moxley. Christopher Daniels, Scorpio Sky ran out. They got beat up by the Crawlers as well. And then out comes Mr. Brody Lee in the most Vince McMahon suit combo possible. Sort of the light brown trousers and the blue blazer jacket. And he cuts a really decent promo on Moxley. Says, you've got something I want. Give me a title shot. And Moxie just looks up at him from the ground and says, all you had to do was ask. It was like a really badass reply. And then the Dark Order beat him up again. And Mr. Brody Lee walked off with the AEW title. And later in the night, they confirmed it will be Moxley versus Lee at Double or Nothing.
Yes, I thought it was a nice segment. As you said, the match sort of prior was pretty standard. I thought that Moxley gave Kaz plenty of offense in that, so that was nice to see. But he won with a bit of a paradigm shift out of nowhere. My only question, as I sort of mentioned to you beforehand, is it too soon for Lee to get a main title shot? Because as much as like he's going to be in the main event, I just thought maybe he could have had a couple of feuds beforehand, because this is, as you say, his sort of only real feud now. He's had a couple of matches and he's sort of beat people up. But to put him into a title feud where either you have to have him lose or you have to make Jon Moxley lose, which feels both kind of counterintuitive, if you ask me, because you want to put Lee over as the kind of the head of the Dark Order. So I don't know, is there just a scurry finish heading our way? Will he be about to lose and the Dark Order jumps in? I'm not sure I want to see that.
Yeah, it is a curious one, and I'm not against it. I think for the situation AEW have found themselves in, you know, Jon Moxley wins the title at Revolution, and, you know, he's got all the momentum in the world behind him, like a really surprising win over Jericho, actually. But then Steve Corino happened, and he hasn't really got to have that fiery feud coming off the back of it. There was some interaction with Jericho. There was the Jake Hager match as well, of course. But really, he hasn't had anything to sink his teeth into. So to use Brody Lee, who, you know, is in a similar position, he's debuted, but apart from Marco's stunt, doesn't really have a tangible storyline with someone else. He just has it sort of within his own faction. So what you lack there is context and stuff. But even though it's not really alluded to, they have a huge amount of backstory in WWE. You know, with those fantastic Wyatt Family versus Shield matches back in 2012, I want to say. When I was doing the research as well, they had matches in CZW as Jon Moxley and Brody Lee.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because it is Shield versus Wyatt Family, but it's not. It's not the main members of either faction, because you've got sort of Roman Reigns and Bray Wyatt as the two sort of heading up guys, and you'd almost call Dean Ambrose the third member of the Shield. And it'd be interesting to see what people think, sort of whether Luke Harper was the third member of the Wyatt Family or whether that was Rowan. I see it was sort of they kind of tossed up, but it's amazing how eight years later, how things have changed from that. I mean, now I'd be much more excited, I think, about this feud than I would be about a Roman Reigns versus Bray Wyatt feud. As much as brilliant as Bray Wyatt is, and Roman Reigns is great, but it's such a different way of looking at the two teams, because you sort of saw them as the sort of lackeys and the guys behind the scenes who were working hard, but never really got the push that they deserved. And now they've moved somewhere else, and they're both being sort of viewed as the top guys in the company.
It's almost like an alternate history where out of that main event 2012 scene in WWE, really five of those six guys, you know, everyone but Rowan, I'm afraid, should have been main eventers in WWE. But that didn't happen for Harper. It happened to an extent with Ambrose, but never fully. So it's really nice that they found a main event of a pay-per-view, of a very big show, albeit with special circumstances here. But to your earlier point, I agree. I don't know how they're going to get around this, but I, you know, trust in AEW, really. They've done storylines and characters like that over and over again since their inception. So I've got to think they're perfectly aware of what might happen. That if you have Brody lose his first proper match, then yeah, that's going to really cut his legs out from underneath him. Same with Moxley. If he loses his first pay-per-view title defense. So the only thing in my head that they can get around this with is with some form of debuting new star or a rise up from within the Dark Order faction itself, which is also too soon.
Yeah, I think if someone's going to win clean, it has to be Brody Lee. But I don't think he should. You don't want to see Brody Lee just lose, because then it's just sort of, well, what was the point of that? I can sort of see them giving Lee the win, maybe not with like lots of interference, but with a sort of a bit of Dark Order getting involved early on in the match, maybe weakening Moxley. And then Moxley can have a few other feuds, and then he can return to Lee once he's kind of powered up again. But yeah, I think you're going to have some kind of Dark Order involvement where, I don't know, it feels like they've really booked themselves into a corner here. But if anyone can book themselves out of the corner, it's AEW. I mean, I don't want to, I know I've never done this review before, and I don't want to jump on the, well, if it was WWE, they wouldn't do it straight away. But I feel like, because the wrestlers are being given so much more freedom to kind of choose themselves, I trust them more, especially because it's Brody Lee, who's worked so close with people like Bray Wyatt, who's a genius, and you've got Moxley, who's completely changed everyone's opinion of him, I think, since he joined AEW. So yeah, if anyone can do it, it's them. But I'm interested to see what route they take.
The only thing that I can think of off the top of my head is that, yeah, that of course the Dark Order, loads of interference on Brody Lee's part, but maybe one of them screws up. And I think it has to be someone on the level of an Evil Uno or a Stu Grayson, because they haven't really been around since Brody Lee joined the faction. And that can almost send Brody Lee into super Vince McMahon mode, where he's just burying people in his own faction. And rather than splitting that faction up, they just become more worried and loyal to him.
So one thing I'd be worried about is that, I don't know, I'm sure there's plenty of Vince McMahon spots for that history they could use, but I'd be worried that they're going to try and incorporate some kind of spot from a Vince McMahon match in this match, where Lee kind of goes so meta that, I don't know, maybe Linda McMahon turns up and kicks him in the balls. Or, I don't know. Or just, there's going to be something which is so obviously Vince that it almost kind of takes away from the spectacle of it all.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So thank you to the submission magician, Shawn Baszler. The jester, Ryan Kester, thank you very much. Spoken class today, Jeremy Smith. That's a Pearl Jam thing, I think. Okay. Send me to heaven, Evan Reich. Thank you, Evan. Yo, Adrian! Rocky. Thank you, Rocky. The Incredible Tarzo. It's like I've got my own personal seal. Not the singer. The fish? The mammal?
It's a mammal.
Joe. Never wrong, Tyler Wright. The Life of Flynn. Leader of the Boys, Dalton Sizemore. The Machine Gun, Gregory Anderson. And the Redneck, Dennis Hicks.
Oh,
thank you very much, everyone. And thank you to our excellent moderation team, Mod Mother Jenna. And who else is in there at the moment? I think Daoud's not in there. Sorry, folks. I don't know who else is in the chat today. But thank you, Mod Mother, and everyone else. Let's see what the super chats say. Of course, get in your super chats. We'll be getting to them throughout the show. Ones that have come in so far from Matt, not from Matt Hardy, on the subject of Matt Hardy, from Matthew Shiel. Sammy getting hit with a golf cart was hilarious, and the street fight actually felt like a fight. Getting what they can to use as weapons was great.
You can tell it's a street fight because they're wearing jeans.
There was so much denim.
And I don't know about you, but all the street fights I've ever had, we've had to change into jeans beforehand because otherwise it doesn't. It's not a street fight.
But it's not regulation attire.
No, exactly. And yeah, the golf cart bump was brilliant. I saw it before I watched the show, and I thought, oh, that looks a bit goofy. But then when I saw the whole thing, I was like, okay, that's pretty cool. Because you're sort of running away. He has to realize he has to run away a bit more slowly than he was quite planning on it. And then he sort of turns around a few times and just sort of jumps into it rather than just going to get hit. But I think that was the only way of actually not getting run over.
It still looks like a horrible bump to take, though. Yeah. Joshua Dominics has said, I disagree with you guys. I think Brody losing and blaming it on all of his followers and beginning to snap would be so interesting to me. I agree. I think that's essentially what we just said. Maybe you got in that comment before we said that. But yeah, I think for that to really work and protect Brody to the maximum degree, one of the followers, there has to be a reason why he's targeting the follower. Alter Ego, is Blood and Guts still happening? It really feels like it's been dropped.
I think it will. I don't think it's the sort of promotion that would just drop it completely. I think it'll happen when they have a live audience. It's a match that I think requires a live audience because of the stipulation of the cages and things like that. Because I think you can have a lot of matches without an audience. Like, for example, this street fight was a perfect example of that. You can use so many props that it doesn't really matter. And the backstage area where there were, for some reason, some children. I think they're going to wait till they can actually have an audience back in before they do Blood and Guts.
Yeah, going by interviews, they all said they definitely still want to do it. It's just a bit irresponsible for them to have 10 people in a ring like that. We'll talk about more about that later. Joshua Dominics, all the crowd noise makes such a big difference. Me personally, yeah. I didn't actually prefer it. We'll get onto that in a bit as well.
The
Crocodile, I've been watching Evil Uno on Twitch. He and Stu Grayson are stuck in Canada because of Steve Carino. So the travel bans, which is presumably why Pac hasn't been on the shows.
I'm showing my ignorance, but why was one of the Creep Dark Order people not wearing a shirt and all the rest of them were?
Because you've got different layers of creepers. You've got like the normal minions who are just faceless jobbers, but then you've got actual wrestlers who have been recruited, and they get a different color mask and some slightly different ring gear.
And a knee brace.
So before we get into the rest of the play-by-play, we'll just talk about our feelings, shall we? Should we talk about our feelings? Because on my review that went up earlier, I said that I loved the main event. I thought it was enormously fun. The rest of the show I thought was, you know, to an average quality of Dynamite, which is, you know, very enjoyable still. But there was something about it that just didn't click with me from the get-go. And it's taken me, I thought about it a lot. And it's just because... I know AEW said that they've tested everyone, no one tested positive. Look, it's so big that the space that we're in, it's got ventilation. All of these safety measures are in place so people don't get Steve Carino. And this isn't a political thing. It's just I feel uncomfortable watching that kind of stuff right now. I don't know if anyone's the same. I watched a Jerry Seinfeld stand-up special last night, and even though it was filmed months ago, I felt weird by having seen so many people close together. So maybe it's on me, but this was filmed live yesterday. And I think that there were a lot of people there and they weren't socially distancing. And I know you can talk about ways to get around it. And there's definitely an argument that if you're going to get everyone in, you batch tape, that's what they're doing. They're doing this every two weeks. I think there's a better way to do it where you just batch tape for 6 weeks in one go. So you minimize all the travel and logistics that comes with that. But the thing that I really, really will die on this hill is the inclusion of Jim Ross on commentary and bringing Jake the Snake Roberts out with Lance Archer, because I feel like neither of those guys, as great as they are, in no way needed to be there. They added nothing extra to the product itself. And they are both at severely at-risk categories for this. And yeah, sure, they might have tested, they didn't test positive here, and everyone else didn't test positive, but they're going to be traveling to and from the shows. I just think it's weird for a promotion that's actually dealt with this quite respectfully up until now, I feel.
Yeah. I mean, I wrote my piece earlier. I sort of, the best way to deal with it would just be put no wrestling on at all. But while they are putting wrestling on, they are, I guess, doing all that they can. But then they do something like this where they bring on Jake, who's sitting at ringside with a mask under his chin. And it's kind of like, if you're going to bring him on with a mask, at least have him wear it, because that just sort of again sends a message of like, we don't really have to wear a mask. And everyone at ringside is sort of, they started sitting 2 meters apart from each other, but then as the show went on, they were just kind of hanging out, talking to each other, standing really close up. And yeah, it's well ventilated and whatever, but I don't think a bit of ventilation is going to change it if someone was unwell. I know they're testing beforehand and everything like that. But yeah, it doesn't need to be a live show. They've proven in the last however many weeks that it doesn't need to be a live show. WWE is now doing not live shows either. And it just feels like it's a pointless risk. And I know that there'll be some people watching who have different views on it and who think, oh, well, they're all being tested, so what's the problem here? But It just sends out the wrong message to me, because you're watching these people. You're kind of, as much as you might not think you are, you're kind of using them as an example, especially over here. I mean, I'm a soccer football fan, and no one's playing, and I sort of use that as an example. Like, okay, well, that I think that's the right way to go. But then I watch this and thinking, well, why isn't everyone doing the same thing? It just feels irresponsible.
Yeah, it's a mixed message. Like, fair play, no one was sick, no one got sick, brilliant. But that sort of message that you're sending to your viewers that, hey, this isn't maybe this isn't a big deal. Hey, mum, why is everyone hanging out here? Sends the wrong kind of message. So from the production side of things, weirdly, I enjoy, just like if you take all of that stuff out of it, I enjoyed the last 6 weeks of TV more than I did this episode. I felt like having a larger place to put this in made that absence of fans feel more noticeable. Whereas the Georgia gym shows, because it was, and I get now that there's, that own risks with it not being as well ventilated as Daly's Place was here. But just having all of those seats and all that voided space made me notice the absence of a crowd more than it would the Georgia gym shows, where the setup doesn't make you realize something's missing.
And one thing that they did that WWE hasn't done up to this point is sort of mention that something's wrong. That Jim Ross actually said, Steve Corino, and said that, oh, Jacksonville's a very Steve Corino friendly city, and there's sort of all this stuff, and it's kind of almost like they're going, well, we're doing things. It's like we're trying to be as, it's almost like they're just throwing in these little excuses here and there. It's almost as if it's the sort of person who goes, I'm not making excuses, but, and then makes loads of excuses. I mean, they're not going to change what they're doing unless there's another crisis, but given the leadership over there, then it looks like this is going to be the norm going forward, and we might even get fans in the next couple of months.
Yeah, so. It's insane to think about. And just if anyone thinks, oh, you're being too harsh on this. We have been saying the exact same thing about WWE since this all began. So, and I've seen a few comments on my review be like, oh, finally, someone's, you know, giving AEW the same criticism that they gave WWE. Because, you know, it's, if we weren't saying this stuff now, it is so hypocritical of us for not to, you know, to level all these accusations against WWE. And then when AEW do a very similar thing, to not criticize them for the same practices. So if you're one of those fans who is very angry towards WWE for the way they've behaved in the last 6 weeks and sees no problem at all with what AEW are doing, then I think you need to have a think about how your own beliefs and alliances might contradict each other. So still, people are still saying AEW bias in the comment, so we'll never escape those. Shall we talk about the actual show, though? Let's park all that stuff. Joey Janela versus Cody Rhodes was the opener. This was pretty much just to give Cody some momentum going into his Double or Nothing clash against Lance Archer.
Yeah, it was good. It was fine. I mean, Janela spoke a few weeks ago, probably about 2 months ago, about sort of heading back, wanting to head back to the indies because he didn't feel like he was getting enough screen time. Because he had a bunch of matches at the beginning when sort of AW started. He had those great matches with Kenny Omega. But since then, he's sort of been a bit of a non-entity. So it was fun to see him back. Obviously, he's a great character, great personality. And it was, as you said, a pretty standard match. And it's a sort of match that I miss, because obviously I review SmackDown. It's the sort of match I miss on SmackDown, because the exhibition match on SmackDown you get are sort of Sheamus killing someone in a minute, whereas this is a sort of 10-15 minute match where things actually happen and characters are built.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were some really nice spots as well. I like the Cody went for a disaster kick off the ropes, and Joey Janela caught him in a release German. And there was, it was just nice fun back and forth. Cody won with the crossroads, shakes Joey's hand afterwards. What was peculiar to me, though, is they had a lot of the wrestlers at ringside, is how much they kept on focusing on Shida. Like, Cody threw the weight belt into the crowd. It was her who caught it. But then Joey Janela seemed to be talking to her as well.
Well, they were also talking to that Leroy bloke in the crowd. Yeah. There was a lot of crowd stuff. Yeah, I don't really... I mean, maybe I'm missing something with the Shida thing. But yeah, there was plenty of folks on it. Maybe they're sort of trying to get her over as the next challenger to Nyla Rose. But there was one particular spot in this match which was confusing, because I think it was a botch where Cody throws Janela towards the ramp. And I think Janela was supposed to do kind of like a sort of forward roll handstand. And he just sort of hits the rope, puts his hands on it, jumps a bit, and then goes, oh, wait, I haven't got momentum for this. And then just sort of turns around and hits Cody. I don't know if you spotted that.
No.
But it was strange, but it didn't distract from the match too much.
Andy, to school you on AEW and how we review these shows, AEW don't botch. Give red herrings.
Okay, right. Okay, yeah. Cool. It was a really interesting piece of storytelling. I didn't really pick up on the Shida thing, but now you mention it, it was an unusual amount of focus.
Well, that played into the next segment, which was a video package hyping up all of the women's division contenders. And we got the return of Nyla Rose, the women's champion, who hasn't been around for about, just under 2 months, really, since all this kicked off, because she couldn't get to the tapings. And she destroyed a enhancement talent called Kenzie Page.
Who's 18. It was a squash match. I think they're doing their best with Rose, and they're doing their best with the women's division. But when your women's champion, when the champion of a division which is struggling already isn't around for 2 months, then I think it makes it even more difficult to get it over. I know Britt Baker's been doing some really good stuff. And obviously Shida's got a really good record and things like that. But then they're sort of just thrown in. I don't know how much of a push has Penelope Ford been getting. And then you've got Statlander, who's an alien. So I feel like what they're pushing towards either a match between Shida and Rose or Britt Baker and Rose. I think more Britt Baker. There was a sort of, they kept mentioning like her as a potential contender.
The fun thing about the women's division, as you said, it's tough because the women's champion hasn't been around for the last 2 months. You could have said that before the Steve Corino crisis with Rio, who was just missing from Dynamite for weeks at a time because she was wrestling in Japan. But yeah, the women's division still hasn't caught fire because it keeps on just, AEW haven't put enough focus on it, really. But in this match, they kept on cutting to the women in the around the ring, Britt Baker, Statlander, Shida. And I was thinking, I do want that. They have all been building independently of each other, and I am now looking forward to a clash. After that, we got MJF doing a promo in front of what I think is a green screen.
It was weird. I didn't realize it was a green screen until they moved the chair, and then I was okay, it's a green screen.
But the Zoom background, I guess, was a fancy skyline of a city. And he's sitting in a red chair. He cuts a really good promo. It's MJF about how he's not the next Rock or the next Roddy Piper. He's something this industry's never seen. Keeps saying how he's not a kid. He's a 24-year-old man. And then he stands up and a stagehand removes his chair. And another stagehand walks in with a giant throne and MJF sits on it. And he says, I'm here to reclaim it. And there's so much sort of subtext in there because Cody smashed a throne on that AEW pay-per-view last year. So I like how they're weaving so many different feuds in
there. As a 24-year-old man myself, I enjoyed that bit of storytelling. I really like MJF. He once called me a pissant British journalist on Twitter, so I've got a nice relationship with him. It's good, and he's going to be back next week in action. He's going to be against Jungle Boy Nate Coy or whatever they call him, Jack Perry, at the whatever it's called, Double or Nothing.
Yeah, that was really nicely done because then it cuts to the crowd where MJF is with Sean Spears, who have kind of bonded over their mutual hate of Cody, which is really fun to see.
Yeah.
And Tony Schiavone's interviewing them. MJF's healing it up. He even says how he's overhealed from his injuries, which was a nice bit of wordplay. And Tony Schiavone, who just plays his role perfectly, says, well, you know, they'll be good when you face Jungle Boy at Double or Nothing. And MJF, huge comedic spit of water, like he's doing a Triple H entrance, saying, what? That's the first I've heard of that. So it's really, really good undercutting of this kind of cocky heel. Then we got the Mox versus Kaz match, which we've talked about. That was the one with the Dark Order running.
Yeah.
Then we got Lance Archer versus QT Marshall.
Well, we got a Brandi Rhodes promo before that. Where she was sort of saying, oh, it's not 1991 anymore. If you hit me, I'm going to hit you back. Sort of talking to Jake the Snake, saying, you keep my name out of your dirty old mouth. Perhaps that's why he was wearing a mask. Archer just, I loved how Archer just came out and just killed someone at ringside. And it was just, okay, all right.
It's his gimmick. Yeah. He beats up people on the way to the ring who aren't wrestlers. It's probably good that he's debuted in a no fans era because he'll just be killing fans.
Yeah.
This was just a standard squash match. Lance Archer was never in trouble. He kept on beating up QT Marshall, but then pulling him up before the three count. And then Britt Baker attacks Brandi with a shoe because Baker hit QT during the match with her heel and Brandi throws it into Rose Ed somewhere. So Baker takes out Brandi in the post-match, rolls her in the ring, and I'm like, oh my God, Lance Archer is going to give her the blackout, which would have been, that would have been amazing, I think. Instead, Jake Roberts got in with the snake, which was cool to see, and he draped it on Brandi Rhodes' unconscious body. And then...
He just sort of... It wasn't... He didn't thrust.
No.
He kind of, I don't know how to sort of do it, but he sort of... did that over her lifeless body, which was weird. But yeah, I mean, the shoe. Yeah, so it was the shoe thing. So she, it was Brandi Throads into the crowd, and then yeah, she just gets DDT'd, thrown into the ring, and then sort of, here's my giant snake penis.
Mm.
I'm going to thrust on you, and I'm twice your age.
So, it was. It's not 1991 anymore, Jake.
No, it's not.
Maybe that's what the promo was foreshadowing.
I see whether that was kind of improvised or whether he would. They would said, "Look, Jake, just Jake, do something weird."
Yeah, yeah. I don't actually see anything wrong with it personally, no. But it just did. It did come across a bit weird, or it, you know, those bits where it takes you out of the drama and you're just like, "Oh, that's a bit weird."
Yeah.
But I personally thought the, you know, well, I've already said my piece. I don't think Jake the Snake should have been there at all. Yeah. I think that it would have been more heat and made the feud far scarier if it was Lance who was doing the sort of intimidation there. Then we got Taz backstage interviewing Darby Allin and kind of soliciting his business, maybe.
Yeah.
And offers him some professional insight. But then Darby just walks off, kind of declining the offer.
Yeah, I sort of thought maybe this will be a thing where Taz keeps trying to interview him and keeps giving his advice, and then eventually Darby kind of gives in and they become a kind of duo. I think it was a good bit of character play. Darby's annoyed about losing, doesn't want to talk about it yet, but maybe he'll open up.
I would quite like to see Taz and Darby together, just because I'm kind of keen for Taz to do anything really in AEW. Of course, he does commentary; he's really good at it, and those little move breakdown vignettes. But I do want it, but I don't think I need it. I think Darby works better as a lone wolf character.
Yeah.
And then came the main event, or as our editor Rich described it, DDT Dynamite, because this was, a lot of people described the Nakazawa Omega Best Friends tag match from a few weeks ago as a DDT style comedy tag match. This street fight, however, was what I'm most familiar with DDT with, and that is just crazy bonkers Falls Count, well, not Falls Count Anywhere, I guess it was, wasn't it, just Falls Count Anywhere shenanigans. This was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, it was sort of as if someone had said they'd gone, oh, do we have to start in the ring? Oh, yeah, you've got to start in the ring, but you can do anything after that. It just starts, and Matt Hardy just bites Guevara immediately. It sort of started in the ring. There was the splash through the table. Then Jake Hager gets involved. And as soon as Hager gets involved, that's where it kind of dissolves into this complete madness. It was a strange place to put an ad break, I thought. Because there was the small screen while the start of the brawl backstage happened. During that was when I think Matt got hit by a bin or a trash can, as you would call it. It was mental.
Yeah, so at one point Jericho kind of fights broken Matt Hardy to the back. Jericho and Sammy come down and they target, gang up on Omega, but then sort of version one Matt Hardy comes out instead, normal Matt Hardy, and wrestles as normal Matt Hardy. And later on, Jericho and Hager, I think, stuff him into a sort of ice locker.
Yeah, man, that was cold.
Yeah, and very good. Is that the one?
I did one earlier, you didn't even hear it. I said Brandi Throads. And then that was worse. But you know, I was interested to see that they called the Twist of Fate. I think they might have called it some kind of cutter, because
I don't think
they're allowed to. Maybe is Twist of Fate a copyright?
I don't know. Strange.
They did it a couple of times, and both times they were like cutter, because they quite clearly wanted to say Twist of Fate. But yeah, so he throws him into the icebox, and then he comes out again as broken, rebroken. So I don't know what happened in that icebox, but clearly something bad.
It's like a lake of reincarnation that's been frozen into ice cubes and put in
broke the ice.
But there was just there were so many fun bits, and just when I thought, okay, that's the big fun bit, like Broken Matt coming out of the ice locker, which you could see coming from a mile away, though doesn't make it any less brilliant. Matt gets in, Broken Matt now, I think he says to the camera as well, the ice has brought back Damascus, and he gets in a buggy. And he drive-bys Chris Jericho. And I was like, that's really fun. Because any buggy action is going to have those fond recollections of WrestleMania X7 and that excellent Kane, Big Show, Raven, hardcore triple threat. Mm. And then Omega gets in the same buggy. And they drive around and Sammy's like, what's going on? And then it was like really good camera work. Cuts to this shot of Matt Hardy and Omega in the buggy, speeding towards Sammy, with Omega hanging out the window, just pointing at Guevara. Guevara just takes a bump off of it. I thought it was excellent.
Yeah, it was really good. I really appreciated Guevara's commitment to just being a ragdoll. And it was brilliant. And he's quite lucky with those. I know it's a sort of gimmicked buggy, but they've kind of got like plexiglass sort of plastic in front of them, so I think it's quite a safe bump to take, even though it looks pretty gnarly, because it's quite thin. It's almost like the stuff that Lexan, which is unbreakable, although it breaks every single Elimination Chamber match, I think it's that kind of thing where it probably looks a lot worse than it is, which is good. You don't want him to actually put his face through glass.
It's not real, folks.
And then there was a bit where Omega climbs up like a scissor lift and does a moonsault over the back and only hits Matt Hardy, I noticed.
Because it's meant to be Hager as well, wasn't it?
Yeah. But the finish comes after some of Matt sort of put through a table, very soft table, and the Judas effect.
Santana and Ortiz got involved as well. It was all of the Inner Circle versus two guys. Judas effect. Make the pin, but this was just a fantastic visual ending because the Inner Circle win. They haven't stood tall for a while, really. It feels like they haven't really been around. They've been doing the Bubbly Bunch stuff, and we got to go off air with Jericho standing up, flanked by all his cronies, with the Jacksonville Jaguar Stadium ground behind them. They're in sort of one of the tunnel entrance ways, so the field was in the background, along with this giant scoreboard, Titantron kind of thing, right at the other end of the field. And it just came up with the inner circle's name on it. And, you know, if you really think about it, there's no way that will happen. Because how did the graphics department know, or the production
and Ortiz were for so long? They were like, right, so we're going to probably finish this match in about 5 minutes. So if you can get that ready.
And where to position the camera. But I just thought it was a terrific visual ending for it.
I'm always interested to see the American middle finger, because I think Americans and Brits do the middle finger very different. I don't know if this to get us demonetized. If you do a middle finger, how do you do it?
I really don't like doing the middle finger. It's one of my many prudish things, so I won't do it.
I'll point it towards myself, but I'm very much I sort of do it like that, whereas the Americans have this kind of more... I don't know what it is.
Knuckles go up.
Yeah, exactly. It's more of a, I think that's why they call flipping the bird, because it looks like it's got wings. But there you go.
Well, I didn't really... It was a fun episode, but I didn't give it a rating. There was something about the whole experience that didn't sit right with me. Some people have been nice about that. Others are furious that I didn't give it an arbitrary rating based on my own opinion. But what would you give it if you had to?
I would give it a 3.5 to 4. I liked the show. I really liked the main event. The main event kind of left me. It's always good when a show leaves you with something.
Oh, Andy.
Fun. Because the rest of the show, more exciting. Oh,
sorry, you're back now.
Are you still there?
Can you hear me?
Oh, that's good. I can hear you. It's slightly out of sync on my feed, but I think leaving you with something good is the best way to make me happy, which is possibly why I haven't enjoyed SmackDown much recently. But the rest of the show was fine.
So the super chats, let's finish those off. Sawyer says, I have to wonder how or if the Brody Mox feud would have been booked if there was no Steve Corino. I think they're doing the best with the circumstances and trust AEW to get a lot out of the next few weeks.
I still think they would have done the feud. I don't see why they would change. I don't see why this situation would change unless they wanted to. Maybe they're saving someone else for Mox when they've got a crowd back. But I feel like it doesn't feel like they've changed plans. It doesn't feel like this is the way they were. They were not going to go originally.
I always felt like Chris Jericho would have got a rematch, but maybe not. Cal Cullen, limit draw. Mox wins with the arrival of the Revolt.
The rival haven't got a non-compete clause, have they?
No, effective immediately. I don't like it, and I'll tell you why. Because you'll just have the optics of four ex-WWE guys.
Yeah, I think that's dangerous.
In the main event. And plus, like, if the Revolt help Mox win, does that position them against Brody Lee? I don't know if that feud works either.
I kind of want to see the Revolt as a heel team as well.
In the tag division.
Yeah.
Dipio D. Poole, I don't think Mox versus Brody feels like a pay-per-view main event of Double or Nothing. It doesn't have a big match feel. Also, I don't think Brody is established enough.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see why you'd think that. And certainly he's not as established as some other people. But I think they've kind of got to work with what they've got. I feel like Pac could have been someone for Moxley to face, but obviously he's not there. I think they're doing their best of what they've got, and I do trust them to do the right piece of booking. And to be honest, after the match is done, I probably won't know what the right booking was until I've seen what they do, and then I can decide, well, that was wrong, or I can go, oh, that was really clever.
Yeah, we're all Captain Hindsight's here.
Yes.
Rangers Mayhem. Jericho putting a cone on his head and laughing like a witch was hilarious.
Like that. It was just kind of, you could tell he just saw it and went, I know what I'm doing with that.
Yeah, he just loves getting over inanimate objects. Bottles of champagne, scarves, Mitch the Plant. And they also put at the end here, will Ollie defend Pete and Luke after Sean Ross Sapp called them jobbers on his podcast?
Well, we'll just have to find out, won't we?
I don't know if I've got the strength to defeat Sean Ross Sapp.
You may have to turn up with an inner circle of your own.
Yeah.
Like five people in your team.
All of, out of the Quizzlemania boxes, all of WrestleTalk could be in one. Miguel, 8-8. Clearly the best part of the show was Kip Sabian pulling out the glasses, but having glasses underneath spot stole the show. You know where you do the...
Yeah.
Very good. Dances with AK-47s. You've gone soft, Ollie. Virus is not as serious anymore. They were tested before the show. No risks. Crowd noise made it better, and the main event was amazing.
No, so come on. I'm trying not to be. The virus is still as serious as it ever was. It's not a less potent virus now. We are better equipped to deal with it. But it's still the same virus. Thousands of people are still dying every day. It's not like it's gone, okay, well, we've had this for a while now, therefore it's not as serious. It's just what we're saying is it's sending the wrong message and that you don't need to have old men hanging around where old men are at high risk of dying.
Yeah. Dibioti Paul, Lesnar makes more appearances than AEW Women's Champions. That's probably true.
Well, they're both called the Beast.
Josh DeDominics, I missed the announcement of the number one contenders ladder match at Double or Nothing Live. Who would you guys put in the match? Thanks for reminding us of that, Josh. This was announced in the show that at Double or Nothing, rather than the Casino Battle Royal that they had last year, it will be a ladders match. So, I don't know, kind of like their Money in the Bank, I guess.
So it's a number one contenders match for the AEW Championship.
I can't remember, actually. I should have written this down.
I can see it being someone that they are looking to give a push. It's not someone who's going to win, but someone like a Kip Sabian, who they just want to give a title match
Yeah, like a TV title match. Yeah, it is for the world title.
Yeah, so like a 20-minute title match could do wonders for someone like that, or someone who's kind of been a bit out of luck, so maybe someone like Spears. I think there are loads of ways you could go with it.
But in terms of who should be in it, all of Death Triangle.
And Moxley is a great way. And Moxley's a sort of will put them over. He'll make sure that happens, which is good.
Maybe Darby Allin in a ladder match, and then to reprise that feud with Mox. Colostopia, Darby to enter an anime training arc with Taz. And finally, Pete, the feud has a month of build to get hyped. I do want to see Jericho versus Pete. Well, it's next week, isn't it?
Yeah, it's next Wednesday. So
Jericho got that all over just from a few lines on commentary. The man's a genius.
A lot of people were saying that they missed Jericho on commentary actually this week.
That's one of, I think Tony Schiavone and Chris Jericho were such a good commentary team. I love the normal commentary team. There was no reason to bring Jim Ross in.
Mm. You could have had Jericho the whole night, and then just at the end he's like, oh well, now I've just got to go and beat these like losers. And then he could just
Christopher Jazz Cat, my Mr. Brody's promo was excellent. I thought it was very good. I don't know if I enjoyed it as much as you did, but Beverly Sailor, don't blame AEW. US opening malls this weekend. Well, yeah, this is another one of the things. Well, you know, read up on a lot of people are saying, well, you know, in Florida, non-essential businesses are allowed to open. I still don't. I don't. Yeah. It's then down to the company's responsibility whether they want to run or not.
Just because you're allowed to do something doesn't mean you should do something. Mm-hmm. I'm allowed to smoke. I don't because it's the wrong thing to do. So I think that's a difficult one because obviously, yeah, they want to put on a product. They want to earn money. They want to keep, I don't know if they've got, there's a clause in their TNT deal where they need to do a certain amount of live shows like the one with WWE. I don't think you can sort of just say, well, they're all doing it.
Yeah, definitely. It's a very, well, if everyone else ran off a cliff, would you? Christopher Jazzcat, AEW needs Chris Hero. That he'll be an incredible signing.
That would be cool. I, as much as I enjoyed Cassius Ohno, he was just a big guy for people to get over. I think one big run in AEW to sort of cement his legacy, because I don't think he managed to do that in WWE, because obviously he's a indie hero. To actually see him have a proper run as Chris Hero rather than Cassius Ohno would be cool.
Yeah. Justin Anzaludia, top 10 list ideas. Thank you. Top 10 AEW versus WWE matches, wrestlers from any era, and top 10 AEW matches so far. Support Wrestle Talk. Thank you, Justin.
I mean, we're just basically getting those already. We've got Matt Hardy. We've got
I want Chris Jericho in a circle leader versus heel 2008 Chris Jericho.
Yeah.
Gabriel D, have some money. Thanks for reporting on AEW, even with your horrible WWE bias, you hacks.
Yeah, I know. Well,
someone's got to. Vince pays the checks, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Lincoln. How's the web traffic today, Ollie? Because Sean Ross Sapp. Didn't Luke say something about Sean Ross Sapp's Fightful traffic?
Yeah, yeah. So there was, I think Adam said, oh, there's 6,000 viewers. And Luke just goes, hey, that's more than your daily web traffic, isn't it? Fightful is a wonderful website.
Yeah.
And once you finish looking at WrestleTalk.com, I urge you to go over there and read the same stories.
Although Sean Ross Sapp fears Davis. Lincoln continues, also that Heidenreich answer last night on Quizlemania killed me. Steve added a lot last night too. Pachiti next? Well, but
I don't know.
We've got a lot of plans. We've got two very fun weeks coming up.
We've got names lined up and you'll find out on Monday.
And thank you, Garage Art with a V, who's the other moderator in the chat. Cheers for helping out, pal. Well, we've got a few minutes before we actually have to go live, so how's lockdown treating you, Andy? What games are you playing?
I hate it, Ollie. I really hate lockdown, but I've been playing a lot of Stardew Valley, which is a lovely kind of calming, relaxing game with my girlfriend. You sort of start a farm together and you build farm buildings, go fishing, go mining, buy animals and things like that and grow crops. So it's very wholesome and it's a calming thing that we do most evenings. Other than that, I've been playing Xbox. I've been playing Call of Duty with some friends. I've ordered myself some jigsaw puzzles. So I'm just trying to kind of keep myself from going insane. What about you? What are you playing?
So I'm playing Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, which...
Finally.
Yeah, well, I got it when it came out, loved it, and I do this all the time with games. Play it very intensely and then just stop and not complete it. Maybe it's because I think I was about two-thirds of the way through, but now I am at the sort of Sith Imperial Fortress, the Imperial Inquisitors.
Okay.
Place, which feels like the last level.
I think that is the last level. Not that I remember, but I think you are nearing the end. I will note that it was quite an abrupt end. I was like, oh, okay, I finished the game. Which was it was a very good game, but it feels like there could have been a few more levels, given that all games these days cost £900,000. I was going to buy myself Animal Crossing, but then I noticed that was £50, and I thought I could eat for a week instead. And also, Stardew is quite a similar game, so I feel like I'd be kind of just playing the same game but on a Switch. So yeah,
I defeated one of the bosses, apparently the hardest boss in the game, yesterday. Meliocius. He's like a Jedi who's now taken over the Night Sisters.
But... Yes. Okay. Yeah. Cool. So he's that kind of traveler, wanderer person.
Yeah, yeah.
Who turns out to be a bit power hungry. So yeah.
It took me ages. I took an hour on him. And I just kept on trying and trying and trying yesterday. And my lady partner, who's been working in the same front room as me, said, well, you know, I've got this call at this time. So you can't carry on after this time because you're making a lot of noise. I was like, okay, had my headphones on. And I'm doing it. And honestly, it's coming up to 2 o'clock. It's the best I've ever done. But I'm on little health. Two more hits, yeah. I'm done. And then, something happens. The other person gets involved. That gives me a leg up. I'm getting near the end of the battle. I think I can do it. But two's happened. The phone call, the Zoom meeting has started for my lady partner. I'm in my own little world, and I defeat him, and I freak out silently. I can't stop these emotions. I'm like, I can't. It's a very difficult thing to convey on an audio format, but I'm just, yes, I'm screaming silently.
I think the key for me was to use the, because you know you end up getting two lightsabers, is the double overhead whack, which seemed to really like break his defense, and then you can kind of go in with a few slashes.
L1 square.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. No, see, I've got an Xbox. I can't remember what it was, but I played it when it came out at the end of last year, so... but yeah.
Well, we've got a show to do. Sorry to wrap you up, but we will. Well, Luke and Adam will be back tomorrow with the Rest Talk podcast, and Andy and Luke will be here reviewing SmackDown. It's all change on Saturday, and then we've got loads of Money in the Bank stuff coming your way early next week. But for now, to steal a Luke line, I love you. Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.